Howdy, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for February 7th, 2018. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, by the way, a note to everyone here. I will miss Sync next week as I will be in a booth at a conference in San Francisco. So, Sylvan, can you be me next week?
Yep.
Okay, I'll make sure you have all the info. All right, so... looks like remove case functions and remove case functions was in final comment period. Looks like ready for a vote. Shall we vote on this sucker?
I vote yes.
I also vote yes. Gordon?
I vote yes.
Matthias?
Yes.
Scott, do you know what this RC is?
I abstain.
You abstain? Well, you could vote yes anyway. Go with the crowd. Go with the crowd.
I refuse to be bullied.
Yes. Just because I feel like giving a crappy explanation to Scott might help anyone listening to this call, there was an awkward implementation of case functions. There is, I suppose, an awkward implementation of case functions in the compiler that has consistently gotten people into trouble. And because essentially what it does is sugar all of your functions together into a pattern match. And it doesn't really quite do what people expect it to do. It's just awkward in a few places. And I think the general decision is it's better to remove the existing implementation right away and revisit it later.
Yes. That would be the idea. That would be the idea. Okay, so boom, that's dead. Theo's not around, is he? Looks like we have comment stuff. Stuff. Whoa, wait, what? Shit. Oh, I merged the wrong one.
Can you unmerge? Wait a minute. But Theo's one is good too, isn't it?
Yeah. Do we agree on improved pony bench? Yes.
I totally
okay,
do.
Okay, let's all vote on improved pony bench and hope that I can back my way out of this problem.
I vote yes.
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 Good. Thank you, everyone.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You know, really, we all should have voted no.
I would hate you.
Still worth it. And we can merge 118, and perhaps it would be good to put 117 into a final comment period.
Which one is 118?
118 is the other one we voted yes on. But yeah. 117 is remove HTTP server from the standard library.
Yes, and that would actually be should be renamed to remove all the HTTP. The detailed design. I need to update this because it says HTTP server, and really this would move the client and the server. So. Yeah. I need to update that. So it can't go into final comment period until I do that.
Okay.
And I need to finish fighting with the thing that I am fighting first. And the, oh, look, I'm not sure why that seg faults. Because. Dun, dun, dun. Reflection magic. Yay. All righty. Okay. So I think that's all we have for RFCs right now. Yes. That would mean we're on to pull requests. So I would like to jump right to a pull request, which is the pull request for why Scott is on here. Joe's not around, but Sylvan, perhaps you could be handy with this one.
Okay.
It's 2513. So Scott spent like 30 minutes yesterday explaining this to me because he was hoping I could explain what Joe was thinking of. And he spent 30 minutes explaining to me so that I had enough background to go, oh, I have no idea what Joe is saying.
Ah. FD exposure. Okay.
Yeah, I have no problem with trying to hide the file descriptor number magic stuff.
Just have a quick go here. Wrapper method. Okay, that's what I need to look at.
So it seems to me that the problem here is that the return type, you know, that comes back out of these, varies based on whatever the user asks for, right? In a lot of cases, it could be an integer, but in other cases, it's like a struct or whatever.
Return type from which? I'm sorry.
I'll let Scott talk.
Okay.
Yeah. Get sock opt and set sock opt are their usage is similar to ioctl or io control or however the hell you say that other. That other system call, in that the pointer that goes in can point to damn near anything you want, and you know it's very specific of whether that part of the kernel or a loadable module inside of the kernel how it interprets what that pointer points to. Joe a couple of days ago put a very helpful playground link in. It's second from the bottom of the kernel history. So he wrote up what he imagined one of these wrapper functions would do for a struct TCP info, which gives detailed statistics about a particular TCP session. And that will break, for example, as soon as anyone decides they're going to implement a new RFC and can add some more stats or bookkeeping or whatever and add it to the TCP info. And depending on what protocol you're working on, there are dozens of these different data structures. And in order to use them, you would need to have a wrapper or some other way of dealing with it. I'm not interested in writing a bunch of wrappers. So.
Yeah. I'm just having a look at... Also, I'm not totally convinced that struct TCP info is the idea of a that is cross-platform in any useful way.
No, it isn't. It's Linux only.
And I'm not totally convinced that it's stable from in my recollection between kernel versions.
Right. That was part of the argument I was trying to make. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Right, so
that with a biohazard suit on.
in my last comment, trying to say that this is a case of an 80-20 or 90-10 rule, that the vast majority of these things are going to be pointers to integers. There's a small argument to whether they're going to be signed or unsigned. For the small minority, what I've started prototyping, and I think I've convinced the compiler is okay, is that we would basically just code two cases. One would be that you're expecting an integer, either to be get or put. And the other is an array of bytes. And that it's up to...
With a specific length attached to it.
Right. And in the case of get sock opt, that you can pass in a big buffer and the kernel signals you, oh, by the way, I didn't use all that memory. Here's a smaller number that I actually used. And you need that as part of interpreting the return result. But
yeah, exactly, which is why it takes a pointer to a size get sock opt.
Yeah, and in creating this new API to sort of skirt around the problem that Joe and I have been wrestling with, it's been very helpful. What the question I have is there an ifdef available to Pony Code for the endian of the platform? There's these ILP and LP ifdef thingies, but there doesn't seem to be an endian one.
You are so right.
Every time endianness comes up, I get sad.
Well, you shouldn't get sad so much as mortally depressed.
Yeah.
I also get sad because I remember all of the effort that I put into that when I was writing stuff that ran on big endian and little endian platforms that needed to work with each other.
Why are you trying to make me sad?
In the 90s. And anyway, you guys go back to that. I'm just going to be over here being sad for a minute.
So I can, you know, I can write this code. Oh, go ahead, Sylvan. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that there isn't, and I think we should add one in platform.pony and implement it in the same exact way that we've implemented, say, LP64. I think probably the best way would be to add two big endian and little endian, each returning exactly the opposite of each other. Rather than to introduce like a union type of big endian, little endian, or something like that. Arguably, I mean, clearly we only need one, but yeah. I mean, technically there are other things. Like there are technically there have been mixed endian platforms. Nobody does that anymore. Nobody ever will, but somebody's going to.
Oh, the endian hokey pokey really sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh yeah!
Glorious. Oh my God! From now on, that's the new term, not mixed. Indian. That's but what it's all about. Huh?
You take your big bite out. yeah, I think you're right. I think it needs, and then I think it just goes right in platform funds. And I think we should be able to do it with, someone has left a very long line in platform funds, line 8.
Where?
Platformfunds.c. Anyway, I think we ought to be able to use the target functions and the sort of the exact same approach with the target functions and expose that. Yeah, it should be fine. Because that would make a difference. That's a good idea.
Right,
if you want to do it, I don't think that requires an RFC. That's just in some sense, a principle of least surprise bug. I mean, literally, I looked in here half thinking that you were wrong and the thing was already in there. So, yeah. And clearly you are right.
So would that be something that folks would be comfortable with me adding to what this PR would morph into, or should it be separate? Or, I mean, I can implement right now something that would just assume if you're using the single integer interface, it will only work if it's on a little endian machine. I don't know if people really want that kind of uncertainty in a standard library.
I think that sounds slightly more uncertain than I'm totally comfortable with. I would be totally comfortable with the change to platform going in the same PR. It's exactly the point at which it's going to be used. It's the first time where we've run into it, which is why we don't have it yet. I'm totally comfortable with it being in the same PR.
To run off on a tangent, if people don't mind the time, in the Erlang world for dealing with these binary conversion thingies, there's in the pattern matching syntax for binaries, there's options for big endian, little endian, and host platform. And so then the question is, what would folks want for the buffered reader and writer, would there be any sense somewhere down the line of having native versions of all of those various API functions?
Yeah, I think that's definitely worth having. They were written with the idea of protocols where it's defined what the byte order is, but clearly for homegrown protocols, that's not necessarily what you want to do. You have a collection of machines and you don't mind if you all talk in native byte order, so I think that's fine. I thought you were going to go down the route of pattern matching bit pattern stuff like there is in Erlang, which is very cool and would work really nicely in Pony. But that's a whole other tangent.
Yeah, I'm too new to open that kind of can of worms.
I don't think that's a can of worms. That's a beautiful Erlang feature that everybody should see eventually.
Okay, so I will try to unveil soon a new version of the API. And again, it would, in fact, the version that I've been trying out is to just use a method name that's attached to TCP connection called, for example, getSockOpt. There would be one optional argument. And if the optional argument were omitted, then it's assuming you want the single 32-bit signed integer approach. And if the argument is present, it's a binary buffer, and it's up to you to interpret the damn thing.
That sounds good.
And then should I put that in a different PR or continue on with the long conversation on the current one?
This is entirely my random preference, and you may have a different one, is that I would just continue this PR because this is where the work is happening. But if you want to open another one, I think that's fine too.
Some people feel that they get lost after half a dozen comments, but yeah, okay, that's fine. I'll continue on this one then.
Does anyone have a preference? Because I kind of like having the history for me, but that doesn't mean that it's right. Do other people prefer having new PR started?
I'm good with it as being part of this.
All right.
Fair enough. Anyone else can add comments to the ticket and yeah. Thanks for your time.
Cool.
Did you get what you needed from that, Scott?
I believe so. Thanks.
Okay, that's good. What else do we have here? We have, somebody opened something 3 hours ago to update sample code and process monitor documentation. That is 2539. Back pressure auth added this is a bad Sean. Sean didn't get this. Okay, yep, Sean is rebasing and merging this right now. because, yep, I missed that when I did that update.
That was an easy one.
Yep, I definitely missed that.
I'm interested in 2532.
We're going to skip down to 2532? Okay, we'll skip down to 2532. Allow tuples to match empty interfaces. Hello, Benoit. Yes, so let's see. The commit comment is very brief.
But the other side of it isn't. It adds an explicit top type test.
He's got some tests here too.
Yeah, indeed.
This is nice. Right. So, and then, I always have a hard time reading the tests that are in the big long honking C strings. So, what does this do here?
It declares an empty interface, an interface with a single function f, And
a trait which is, you know, that so it, oh wait, so
the trait that, isn't the fun part. The fun part is adding the two interfaces, and it adds an additional chunk of code there that says it expects after compilation, we're going to do a match type except, and we're going to say we're expecting match type except out of type of I1 is type of C1.
This is allow tuples to match empty interfaces. Okay, great.
So C1,
okay.
C1 is the pair, yep. C1, C1. Yeah.
Yep. I guess that makes sense. Yes, anything should be able to match a empty interface. Indeed.
And there are still open questions about value types that we should come back to regularize tuples even more. This is a very good start. It's just that in the long run, we want to do more of this.
This is nice. All righty. Merge?
Yes, please.
Done. Who has the thing that sounds like a tea kettle going on? Yeah, that. Let's check out 25:28. Add unit test and runtime assertions for descriptor table.
Ooh. Well, that's very helpful. So what we're doing here is we're JIT compiling, pulling the descriptor table, and running over tests on that descriptor table. To make sure that what's coming out is what we expected to have put in.
That seems like a good one to merge.
Indeed.
All righty. Boom. Let's see. 25:27. Add warning about pending_pending's use in TCP connection pony. This seems pretty straightforward. I think can a couple other people read the comments that Scott here and make sure everybody understands what's going on? And if they do, then I think we definitely have a good comment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Gordon, does it make sense to you?
Yep.
Matthias?
Yes, kinda.
Kinda suggests no. So maybe there's a bit more detail that's needed.
I trolled myself for 4 days looking for memory corruption because in a nearly cut and paste of TCP connection that's used inside of Wallaroo in various places, I removed that pending array. Life went really, really weird.
Yeah, it would go quite wrong quite quickly.
Oh, it took longer than one would think.
Ouch.
So do you get what this is saying, Matthias, or should we try to reword this?
Yes.
You get what it's saying?
No, it's It's so the comment is fine. I'm just trying to understand. So if a byte array is passed on to the socket or to ASIO, it's not visible for Orca anymore, but it's also but it still is accessed, kind of.
So that's interesting. I'll give my lousy version of it, and then maybe we'll all have given a version of it. So for me, it's the pending write V is storing point IO vectors in a way that's quite useful for calling write V, which is to say it's a pointer length packed in a tight array of IOVs. Because you're not going to be able to express those things as pony objects themselves when you pass them down into the kernel. But if you express them that way and lose track of the pony objects themselves, those pony objects be collected before you then pass your pending write Vs eventually to your actual write V call. So that by the time you actually call write V, the data that you expected to be passing along is no longer actually in memory. That it's been reused.
Yes, that was my experience.
Yeah.
And it's related to the conversation we had about get and set socopt, in that it's much more likely to happen if you can fill the TCP window somehow, either by completely suspending or disconnecting the far end of the TCP socket, or setting a really small buffering size with set socopt.
It's interesting the thing.
And so then you can introduce a delay where Orca can get its fingers into things when the socket write says E again.
Yeah.
Introduces a scheduling decision.
Cool.
Yeah. Merge. Okay. That's. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Done. Okay, before we continue on, does anybody have does anywhere at the halfway point, does anybody have anything they would like to bring up to discuss?
I will if I can find the email I'm looking for.
You said yes, if you could find a thing?
Yep. Oh, it has to do with generalized back pressure.
Okay. I'm interested.
Yeah.
This is something which is in my
heart. Yeah. Oh, I apologize. I meant to have this ready in advance.
You're a loser, man. That's big, true. Big L. You're like Otto's friend who works at the store.
Oh, please. I sure hope so. aha. No. Okay, basically, let me give you the short version while I'm looking for this damn thing, which is that Matthew Parkinson, who works at Microsoft Research, was having a look at the back pressure implementation, and he found what looks to be a way to lock up the scheduler. And if I could find the email, then I could, here it is. Got it. Okay.
Oh, great. I screwed it up.
Okay. So you create two actors, A and B,
mm-hmm.
queue behavior M1 n times.
N times.
Where n is larger than the threshold for Newton.
Uh-huh.
M1 sends a message M2 to the other actor. M2 does nothing. So that's fine, right? All it's going to do is drain off into the other actor. However, they'll both get muted, and neither actor will be scheduled.
Wait, why will they both get muted?
Both have exceeded the threshold, and in order to drain messages, they send to each other.
Wait, how? I don't understand how we got into this scenario. How?
I'm going to paste the thing. Hey, Joe. I just noticed Joe's here. All right, so I pasted a thing in the Zoom group chat. I'll also put it on Slack.
And queue behavior N1 and and queue as in what? Are we doing this through the C API so that the...
No. In queue, in this case, just means post, right? Send the message M1.
N times on the two actors, so...
Where N exceeds the mute threshold. And the result of M1 is to send M2 to the other actor in the pair AB. The behavior M2 does nothing. So this, without back pressure, would drain and terminate.
So basically, it's this thing is not overloaded, right? M1 is not overloaded. The one that has M1 is not overloaded.
They both have M1. You enqueue M1 n times on each actor.
Okay, I'm just not getting it.
Okay, so you have an actor that has two behaviors, M1 and M2, a type that has two behaviors, M1 and M2. Mm-hmm. You have two instances of it.
Okay, that's right there. That I did not get that when you said two actors. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And before you let these actors go and do their thing right there in main, you take threshold, mute threshold plus one, and we'll call that N, and you send M1 to A and M1 to B, and both of them, each of them N times, such that each one is now will be overloaded when it's processed.
It doesn't get overloaded until it's processed its queue.
Right, will be overloaded once it processes its queue. So actually, you're going to need more than threshold messages, right?
Okay, so then I do this, right? Uh-huh. And okay, so I run one of them, and it gets marked as overloaded.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. It's going to get marked as overloaded when it gets to the end, even if it has more, right?
That's right.
So it won't get muted.
Ah.
Overloaded actors don't get muted.
Overloaded actors are never muted.
Are never muted. Never. That's the rule. Never.
Excellent. I will explain this to Matt, and I think
I was like, oh, dear God, please, no, I can't see how, no, please, no, no. I'm like, no, 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 yeah, no, like, yes, so so the rules are, and I wrote a mini treatise inside the scheduler for this, and someone could still come up with something where I believe them, but if you're overloaded, then you can't ever be muted.
Okay.
Which means that can create interesting scenarios where you could have two actors that are overloaded, right? And actor one sends 1,000 messages to actor B for each one, right? And you create a feedback loop where the back pressure system can't do anything about it, right? Because they're both overloaded, it's never going to stop because they're both allowed to keep running, because otherwise if you don't allow overloaded actors to always send, they can't ever drain their queue, and then the program can't terminate, like he's saying.
Excellent. This is extremely good news.
I was really terrified there. I'm like, wait, but
thank you for sticking with me on it, on both the fumbling for the email and the explanation.
No, that's good. That's cool. That is cool. That is cool. That is cool. Does anybody else have anything? Otherwise, I do have one to look at.
I was going to ask, did you guys already cover Scott's socket option PR before we got here?
We did, but we can also go back over it.
Yes, we could certainly do that.
I can I can listen to the sync call, or if you guys like wanted my input on something, I can give that now. It's up to you.
Your input is definitely wanted. So what we looked at was, I agree with Scott about this sort of 80-20, 90-10, whichever particular balance it is, on I don't want to touch struct TCP info, because not only is it not cross-platform, it's not even really cross-kernel. It evolves pretty quickly. Which means that if we had a struct to reflect that, it sort of comes back to the processing C header files problem. So that's just the specific example. The general example is, Scott was saying, okay, well, then if we go down the route of saying you could pass an arbitrary byte buffer as well as an integer, and then it's up to the caller to interpret that result however the hell they want to, which means this is an extensible API, but we aren't wedding ourselves to necessarily implementing these things. But if someone wanted knew that they were running on, you know, kernel 4.13 and wanted TCP info specifically for 4.13, and they were happy writing that themselves and passing it, they could through this API.
I think I would probably come at it from a position of saying, figure out how to allow both, right? Like, if there's, so TCP info is this, like, really volatile example, right? But there might be a struct somewhere, or some non-I32 example of a socket option that is stable and has been around a long time, and we want to, and we also think it's like fairly common, and we want to support that. And I could see us, you know, using that, the pattern of, hey, let's just use a struct pointer and pass it in that way.
I totally agree. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And that, well, Scott, I'm kind of representing your idea. I apologize. If I get it wrong, jump in. But I think with Scott's approach, that would allow you to also pass a byte buffer, which of course can just be a struct, right? Then I think we're good. I think that actually works pretty well.
So my concern would still be that I would like to see these APIs not be exposing the FD if possible.
Me too.
Just in terms of, like, if you pass it, even if we want to have a byte buffer API, we can have that as an API of TCP connection, where the user passes in the byte buffer as an argument and they get back their socket option. When I talked about wrapper methods in the PR, I was mainly talking about just, like, in terms of making sure that we're reducing the duplication as much as possible between things like TCP connection and UDP socket, because we got a central implementation somewhere, and then those just delegate to that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Does this seem reasonable, Scott?
Yes, and I know it's lacking a bit of context. I put a snippet for get sock opt where it has an optional argument for the binary blob, and then if there's a none in there, then we'll assume that the user wants to do the single signed word style, I can rework everything using an API kind of like that. I'll put it into the existing 2513 PR and see how horrible it looks.
I love to see how horrible it looks, framing. It's kind of what I think on everything I do. I'll do this and I'll see how horrible it looks.
Yeah. It occurs to me that if we wanted to get really aggressive about that byte buffer, you could say, instead of taking an array U8, or no, let me put that differently. You could take an empty interface, you could take any there, and if it's an array U8, you deal with it as an array and let it write in and be all sensible that way. If it's none, you don't do anything. And if it's some other random pointer, you pass it as if it were a byte buffer to allow the look I defined a struct approach. I don't know if that's just too dangerous for words. Actually, the struct isn't going to match the interface anyway. Never mind.
Yeah, I don't think that works from a type safety point of view.
Yeah, doesn't work well. I was thinking if it was internal, we could hack around it, but no.
Do we want to consider having? So are there socket options that we care about that are common that return something other than an I32, but it's still a simple type, right? Like an I size or something to that effect. Or a Boolean, for example.
Funnily enough, the Booleans that get dealt with for GetSockOpt are all 4-byte integers.
Right. Well, what I'm getting at is I wonder whether we might want to have, rather than trying to pack it all into one GetSockOpt, I'm wondering if we want to do something like have like GetSockOpt I32, GetSockOpt bytes, GetSockOpt bool. And then it's assuming the type signature changes, so you don't have to worry about like on the other side of it converting your I32 into a Boolean in a way that makes sense and so on.
I like the idea of adding Boolean to the the union type, because that would be useful, and there's already existing code that does that with respect to set no delay for the Noggle algorithm and for some of the multicast code. The one example that exists today in the code that I'm aware of for dealing with something larger than single integers is dealing with multicast sockets, and then also setting the options for TCP retransmit stuff.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that adding it to the typing in makes sense for GetSockOpt, because you want that to be the return value in that case.
Also, I'd be concerned about boxing bools through that union type.
Yeah, so that's why I was thinking that maybe it could be a separate method. I mean, I don't know, it's maybe a little bit bike shedding at that point, but I just, it's one of those things that I think in Pony, if you know at the call site, which version of the method you want, then it should really be a different method. Rather than having match on, like, none versus the array U8. I don't know, that's just my... I just wonder whether we're boxing ourselves into a corner with array U8 and none, like for things like Boolean. I'm not sure how to adjust the example you pasted in chat in a way that accounts for returning a bool without making a match in a weird way. I don't know.
Yeah, interesting.
I'll try wrestling with it and, again, see how much horribleness appears.
Could probably be written as with that thing being a generic formal parameter, and then doing an if type instead of a runtime pattern match.
Yeah, my only concern is that we might, with if type, we might run into the problem of that we talked about. I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, with the being able to say. I32 or bool, but not I32 union bool. Like, do you get what I'm saying, Sylvan? Yeah. Like, if you have constraints, okay.
Yeah. Yep. It took me a second to wrap my brain around it, but yeah.
Yeah, which makes me think that, like, just adding, like, getSockOpt_i32 is, like, it's the sort of poor person's version of that approach.
Yep.
You can't use if type because it doesn't do everything. You know, that the if type and type parameter doesn't do all that we'd like it to do yet. And I think one of the cases where you have problems is when you have to return your value at the end, and it's hard to write an if type expression that the compiler is certain that you're returning the right type from it.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask about with this is, how dangerous is it to be able to choose arbitrary level and option name I32 arguments? Like, can you mess stuff up significantly on your? I mean, I guess it's your socket. If you have fun ref access to the socket, then I guess it's your problem. I just wonder if there's any like memory safety issues with allowing arbitrary level and option name.
The kernel is supposed to return eval or some error no okay. setting for bogus crap like that, and it's totally up to the data validation for a particular option for deciding whether the stuff inside of the void pointer or char star pointer thingy whether that stuff is valid. So yeah, it should be okay.
Yeah.
So do we want to make this a partial method then? And then that way we can raise a pony error if we get E inval?
The current shape of the API is returning a negative number where that negative number is the error number with a minus sign on it. I honestly don't know if that's good enough and pony-ish enough.
The other thing I'm concerned about is, are there any socket options for which the and a negative I32 would be a valid value that would be confused with?
Well, recently I got the endianness wrong when dealing with setSockOpt and discovered that OSX returns enobufs instead of enval when the number was too big. There's just a whole lot of operating system specific stuff happening at that point, and I didn't want to be setting too much policy. Your question about a partial method, I was leaning against it, but if you wanted to twist my arm and say that we should be using error, I could do that.
I'm guessing you were leaning against it because you want to include the information about which error no was returned, right?
That is helpful, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but my concern is that with the current approach, if the return value is overloaded to either be here's your valid answer, right? Here's your I32 that the kernel returned to us.
Okay, I understand. Yes. If that would be API abuse, I mean the argument I would put forth, and whether it's a good one or not, but I would say that you should be using the binary one and interpreting that yourself, because then you have information, the return value from the FFI tells you whether you failed, and so then you shouldn't be looking at the buffer at all. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understood.
So there's a documentation way of solving the problem that you're posing, or trying to put policy in the code, and I'm not quite sure how to do that policy in the code.
I mean, the other option is you return a tuple, right, that has the integer, and I guess maybe the thing that I'm not super comfortable with here is the part about overloading different especially having the return value mean something different depending on whether you pass the option argument as none or not. And also I think that, you know, for the case of an I32, telling someone like if they're looking for an I-32 answer and you're telling them that you should be using the array U8 version of this function, like I don't know, that seems a little bit inconvenient as far as like you know, now I have to, you know, get back my array U8 and like you know, index it and deal with the partialness of that index. And so it makes me think that these should be separate methods. But in the case of getting an I-32 back, I'm inclined to say that you could return like a tuple of two I-32s with like the first one representing the erno or zero if it was successful, and the second one representing the value that you got.
I have contemplated that, and I'll bow to the wisdom of the larger group.
Yeah, I'm curious if anyone else has any thoughts about it. I don't want to be dominating this at all. I'm just trying to share my concerns.
I think it's excellent that you guys are actually considering this stuff in detail. I think it's fantastic. I think, unfortunately for me, I feel too half-assed about this, and I would accept literally any of these approaches. yeah. Sorry. So I'm afraid my input is not excellent at this point. Other than, yay, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, I guess it seems to me that like for any common return type that you're looking for, whether that's I-32 or bool or something else, that's not the crazy like, you know, TCP info struct, but anything common, I would say that you shouldn't have to use the array U8 buffer approach and like employ, you know, like put together the endianness yourself on the caller side and all that stuff. Like, I think that's stuff that we should be handling for you if we can. And then just returning a tuple where it's, like, the result value that you want. And then the other thing is some info about the error. That could be an I-32 corresponding to the erno. Or maybe better would be, like, a, you know, I think in the file API, don't we have, like, a bunch of primitives that represent various ernos? I think we do.
Experimental protocols can, at least in Linux land, can invent new error nodes, as far as I know. So,
okay,
that's definitely true. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could do the I-32 approach and then have some way to look up like which, like, because the caller would need to look up which way is erno inval, right? Like, maybe it's like, you know, erno is a pony primitive and in inval or an einval is a method on that pony primitive that returns the integer value corresponding to einval, and that's how you do it. So your call site looks like, you know, if my error result is zero, then everything was successful. Like you're like in a match statement, I guess, on the result. If you got zero, then you know it was successful. If you got erno.inval, then you know how to deal with it that way, and so on. Yeah.
The system call is something that I wouldn't expect would necessarily be on any code's hot path. I mean, if you're going to be making zillions of system calls, maybe you should rethink your, you know, sort of hot path. But I'm typically used to dealing with tuples like that using match, and occasionally Sean scolds me for using over reliance on using match. I guess, you know,
wait a minute.
The underscore one and underscore two syntax is that a potentially quicker way if you're concerned about that for accessing those tuple elements?
I'm confused by the entire concept of over-reliance on match. There's no such thing, but anyway.
Yeah, no, I think match is fine. I think that's what I believe
the context there, if I'm remembering back to this moment in time, was that avoiding match and such things in hot paths, it can be a desirable thing given that there is an overhead to them and it needs to be considered in hot paths. But I don't actually remember this conversation or when I quote unquote schooled.
No, that's fine. I if people cared, I suppose what I would do in the case of returning a tutuple would be the first element would always be a single type, so that match wouldn't be required for disambiguating types, and maybe that would be good enough for the speed freaks, you know, code tweakers.
That is literally me, and I apologize.
What, you're a tweaker?
Some people I'm just care. Gonna leave it there.
You're a tweaker, I'm a tweaker. Wouldn't you like to be a tweaker too?
Yeah. So the thing that I, let's see, like the so there's two things here. Yeah, I definitely think that the if you're returning a tuple where the first element is like your error information, yeah, I think it should be the same in all cases, right? Like you have a union type that's like, you know, it's either it's like an I-32 and you match that up against some values that you can access, or it's like a union type with none and some primitives in there. I think that makes sense. As far as the like result type varying, I guess the part that I'm that makes me shy away from having the result type vary at all, and shy toward having it be like separate methods, like getSockOpt_I32, which returns error info, you know, comma I32, and like getSockOptBool, which returns error info, comma bool. I mean, the reason that I shy away from having it a single method that returns the error info in the first position and the result type in the second position is that if you, and having that result type be a union of all the possible result types, is that if you know at the call site which one you're using, you shouldn't have to make this match on the back end, like not for performance purposes, that I think you should try to avoid that match. It's the, my concern is that like, what do you do if you call, you know, if you call it and you say, I want to get an I-32 back, what does your code path do if you get a bool back, right? Like, you have to account for that case because Pony makes you account, you know, for every case that could happen. So, I mean, you can do something like use an unreachable primitive, like Sean and I have talked about in the past, that just like aborts your application. But I think, you know, it's better if we can avoid making the user do that, and I think we can if we, because they know at the call site what they're looking to get as the result. Does that rant make sense to anyone else? Sorry.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. It's just that like the Pony is like super pedantic about making you account for every possible error case, and so if the function signature says this can return an I-32 or a bool, you know, and you don't account for the bool case, then you know you've got. As far as the type system's concerned, you have a gap in your code, that's something that doesn't need to be there if we just design the API differently.
That worry I understand. The whole goal of this is eventually, you know, to make using these two system calls easier, and
right,
having to deal with that kind of headache is definitely not intended. Yeah.
I hate to say it, folks, but we're running out of time.
Yeah. So, Scott, if there's anything that you want to connect with me about on this issue, you know, you can feel free to ping me and message me. I've been pretty busy, you know, these past couple weeks, but I can definitely, if you ping me, I'll just tell you if I'm busy. Otherwise, we can talk about whatever other issues you want to discuss with me.
Okay, great. Thanks. So what we had agreed to before you were able to join was that I would try or I would refactor the API along the lines of what I put in the Zoom chat and add it to the same PR, and then you and everyone else would have a chance to look at it. And then what I would be tempted to do would then be is try to write something short and succinct about the options of how to deal with the error no or error condition handling that you've just described, and see if that should go in also.
Okay. That's good.
All right. So we're at the end here for this time. I just wanted to point out we seem to have a person who at least is new to me on the sync call. So I just wanted to say hi to whoever is logged into Zoom as Steve Farmer. And I thought before we dropped off, I'd give you a chance to say hi if you wanted to, introduce yourself or anything like that. If you want to stay quiet, you can. Steve sent hi from the chat. Feel free to unmute yourself if you want to. Okay, he says he's just listening in. Well, Steve, feel free to stop by anytime in the future.
I didn't know you wanted me to speak. So thank you for doing this, and I just wanted to hear the sausage being made. I'm trying to learn Pony. It's an interesting language.
Fantastic. We make some pretty gruesome sausage.
Well, thank you.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks everyone for coming. Sylvan, you'll be me next week, so you'll have to do all that fun stuff because I'll be standing in a booth trying to sell software to folks
yes, boss.
I think it's in Menlo Park, but I'm not sure. I can't remember where it is. Anyway, all right. I'll talk to y'all later. Have a good one.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
See ya.